now for.
And you are tuned in to listener-supported WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton. And if you haven't done so already, be sure and set your dials for radio worth listening to. The Newtown Nation, real change through positive community action. Listen up, all you lovers of the Newtown Farmers Market. The Newtown Farmers Market has reopened, and that's 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. at the Redevelopment Office, located at 1782 MLK Way. That's 1782 MLK Way, and it's open every first and third Friday. For more information, call Val Buchand at 941-544-3262. Again, that's 941-544-3262. And good morning, Sarasota, Bradenton, and to everyone tuning in, and welcome to The Interview, and that's the I-N-N-E-R View, a show where we explore transformation and well-being from the inside out. The intention for this program is to inspire, inform, awaken, and transform your mind, body, and spirit. And I'm your host, Darlene Coleman, and my guest today is Lisa Cedrone. Lisa, welcome to The Interview.
Thanks, Darlene. It's great to be here.
And can you just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure, Darlene. I had a career for about 20 years. I worked for very large business-to-business publishers. I was an editor and editor-in-chief, and I had a very traditional upbringing, nothing traumatic, nothing out of the ordinary. And in 2002, I had a unique experience, a near-death experience, that took some time to reconcile, and it landed me in Florida, where I started what I would consider the second journey or second major part of my life. And now I operate a freelance business. I'm the editorial coordinator and director for a magazine called Transformation, and I'm also currently the executive director of the Carl Jung Society in town. And I have my own freelance creative and editorial business called Dragonfly Nation.
Well, we are certainly glad to have you. And so you just heard her bio, but I do want to share a little bit about Lisa's incredible story. And as she had mentioned, it does include a near-death experience. So I'm just going to read a little bit of that for you now. This is called The Presence, a crash course in higher guidance. It was a busy afternoon, the Saturday before Thanksgiving. Lost in thought, sitting in the passenger seat of the Jeep, I suddenly felt the presence hovering over my shoulder. It communicated telepathically, "Look up, but don't panic." At that moment, my whole world transitioned into slow motion. I saw the speedometer jump to 50 and then almost 60 miles per hour as we crossed several lanes of traffic, ran up onto the grass median, and headed directly into the path of oncoming traffic at a major intersection. Jess was having a grand mal seizure, convulsions, a foot smashing down on the gas pedal, cars veering everywhere, and the blur of restaurants and stores flashing by in my peripheral vision. Somehow, the presence kept me focused. I knew who he was. I had faith in him, and his instructions were clear in my mind. Hold Jess in the seat with your left arm as you use your left hand to steer. Use your right hand to shift into neutral. Pull the wheel to the right and aim for the tree between the two buildings. Don't worry, you won't hit it. Prepare for impact. The Jeep is going to flip end over end. Less than a minute later, suspended from the seatbelt, the Jeep now on its side with the two upturned wheels spinning, I was surprisingly calm. The driver's side was flush on the ground. Jess was still there, and he appeared uninjured. How was this possible? The top was off, and he wasn't wearing a seatbelt. How did I drive back over the median and then navigate over four lanes of traffic without hitting any other cars? How did I manage to crash the Jeep into the only patch of grass in miles of suburban strip mall sprawl? The presence was still there, but my questions went unanswered. Instead, he gave me a deep impression, a knowing, that I was ready to move into the next phase of my life journey. Then, suddenly, as if a protective bubble had popped, I was overwhelmed by the sound of approaching sirens, people screaming, and the rush of nearby traffic. It was all over. The accident, my long-awaited second encounter with the presence, and my season of personal apocalypse. Now, first, before we begin, I just want to let our listeners know that everyone is okay, correct? You're here today. Jess is doing well?
Yes, Jess is doing well. He's back in Virginia. He's married, having a good life.
Great. So, Lisa, this is an incredibly dramatic and scary story, and yet you weren't afraid. You were calm. You were clear. And there was something guiding you, something called the presence. Can you tell us a little bit?
Yes. Before we start, I'd like to say that as an individual, I feel like we need to find our own scaffolding or frame of reference for which to describe things. And a lot of times people get hung up on definitions. So I just want everyone to know that I had to come up with my own way to describe this, and it might not be your way. And sometimes we can get a little blocked by that. So for me, the presence was a very telepathic entity that came at this time of great trauma. And basically, I felt that time had slowed down to an incredibly minute, every second felt like an hour. And I was given these instructions, and I did them without question. I completely understood what I was doing. And I was also given information about what would be coming in the immediate future. So in that respect, it was extremely strange, although since that time, I have had confirmation from many other people that they have had similar experiences. And after that, I just got a great sense of knowing that I had passed a huge milestone in my life, and I was getting ready to move on. And as they say, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear, and that comes a little bit later in the story.
Right.
But we both walked away from it with very minor injuries, and it truly was what most people would classify as a miracle.
Well, what a dramatic exclamation point, you
yes.
know, for you, a message for you. But the reason you were so calm is because this was not the first time you had experienced this presence in your life, correct?
No, it was not. I had a near-death experience in 2002, and it was at a period of time in my life where you could have said that I had everything. I had a fabulous career. I was getting ready to get married. Everything was going better than you could have possibly imagined. I was in Washington, D.C., and I was extremely empty inside. And I had been struggling with this for many years. And a set of circumstances came together where I had been out at a Washington Redskins game, drinking heavily, and came home that night and had a very intense fight with my soon-to-be husband, and basically took a very apathetic approach to life and said, I can't sleep. I have to leave on this business trip. I overdosed on an extremely large quantity of over-the-counter sleeping medication.
Now, that wasn't intentional, though. You were just trying to...
It was semi-intentional in an altered state of consciousness. I was just so distraught, depressed, and disillusioned with life that I basically either wanted to sleep or not wake up. That's how I felt. But I did wake up, and I made a very, I would say, fatal yet not fatal decision to fly on a plane that morning. And once I reached my destination, about 12 hours later, my body started shutting down. At the time, I did not know that Tylenol, as an over-the-counter substance, which was a part of this medicine, was extremely toxic to the liver. So a bunch of strange things started happening. I would call them guides. They were non-physical beings, showed up. They kept me awake. I was given all types of information. I call it my Metaphysics 101 class.
Now, you're conscious during this, correct?
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely. And this went on for, I would say, about 48 hours. And at one point, I actually was failing and went to the other side. And it wasn't the white light experience that many people have. But my primary guide, I'm going to call it. And remember, these are just my words. Other people have other words. They mm-hmm. might call it an angel. They might call it this. But for me, it was a decidedly male energy. And of course, you know, we operate here in duality, where there are male and female, dark and light, and I just knew and could understand that this was a male presence. Why? I don't know. Maybe it was to balance me out. But I experienced unconditional love, and I was given a chance to come back again. And it was explained to me that I had not done what I came here to do in this life, and that if I came and checked out, I was going to have to come back and do it all over again. And no matter how much I wanted to go, because that sense of peace and that unconditional love that is very hard to explain. And Dr. Raymond Moody, who you know wrote Life After Life and did the documentary, he describes that feeling in his work. And it seems to be a universal concept that many people feel when they go through this threshold. So I just knew in my heart I needed to make a decision to come back. And I did, and I was given enough motivation to get myself down to the hotel lobby of this hotel where I was staying, where I was looked at, and immediately an ambulance was called. I was transported to the Stone Institute in Chicago through Northwestern Hospital, and the Stone Institute is the psychiatric ward. And that was the beginning of what I would call my journey of apocalypse, because it was an extremely upsetting, no frame of reference experience for what the average person doesn't really get a chance to explore in their life. And during the actual 48 hours, I was given a healing. My whole body energy was run through it. All these different things I experienced, all this knowledge I gained. I was explained how we're all energy, and the list could go on and on and on.
This is from the near-death experience, not the hospital stay, just to clarify.
It was from the near-death experience before I got into the hospital. Okay. So, you know, it was a very traumatic experience in my life. I was a very dedicated professional. I had a publishing career. It was unfortunate that I had to be on a business trip when this happened, because it was not in the privacy of my own world, and it was hard to deal with.
And it's interesting because you were saying right before that, you know, you weren't necessarily having, you felt like something was missing. Then you have this near-death experience where you think, well, obviously I'd choose to leave because I was so unhappy, and yet your soul made the decision to stay.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, after this, in the months that followed, and after you're in the hospital, you're sharing your experience with people. You're letting people know that you received this healing because the doctors could not figure out why you didn't die, why you didn't have complete organ failure with the amount of meds that were in your system. And yet, you were not met with the kindest reception. Tell us a little bit about what that experience was like.
I personally couldn't reconcile my new perspectives with my old world. And in my old world, I had this great sense of something missing, and I was constantly questioning to myself, what's the point? How can I not be happy when I have everything that society says that I should have? I have a great job. I have all the material things. I have a successful husband to be. And I was feeling very, very depressed. And then I come out of this, and I'm saying to myself, oh my God, how can I reconcile what happened? Being a writer and an editor, I was given instructions through these, let's quote, call them non-physical beings, to document all of this. And I didn't know what the meaning of documenting it was, and I didn't question it, because sometimes when you get information that is so impressed upon you, the importance of it, it's very hard to describe. The only thing I could say might be similar from talking to other people is that when something happens to a child and you just know that you have to do this, or that you're going to lift this car up, it's kind of the same thing when you're sitting there and you're like, you have a choice whether you're going to go back or not. Yeah. You just know that you have to go back for some reason.
Almost like it's not an option, but it's a calling, if you will.
Exactly.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about the resistance that you encountered from friends and family, and also the medical community, because they actually diagnosed you as being mentally ill at some point, yes?
Yes, they did. And by by all means, Western society and our medical community, I fit into their definition of mentally ill. So what happened was, over the next year after this experience, I was extremely torn. I was trying to deal with all of this new experience and also go on with my old life. And after about 13 months, I lost my dog. And I have no children, and I had a 15-year-old Chow Chow who was like my baby. Oh. And I went into a clinical depression afterwards, because I think it was the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
It was the final straw, the one thing that put me over the edge. And from there, I went from psychiatrist to psychiatrist, who would spend 10, 15 minutes with me, send me away with a bottle of pills. I would take the pills. I would feel absolutely worse. And I had always been, had an affinity for drinking. It was something that I knew I was on the path of high tolerance and borderline having a problem with it, because it was also a way that I kind of escaped from reality in some places. So what happened was, every medicine that I took made me worse. And I'm not saying that some medicines don't work for some people. And through this process, I have become a very strong advocate of being self-aware and a self-evaluator of everything that I put into my body. And just not to know that there's a magic pill. But things happened. One medication that I was given, I had seizures. I was hospitalized for almost 3 weeks, and they told me I almost died again. And at that point, I was diagnosed as bipolar 1. And the more I would talk about my experiences, the crazier that they would say I was. And at that point, I started my dark night of the soul. And it lasted for many years, because as I spiraled down, more medicine, more self-medication, right. And I reached a point where I hit my bottom.
So I was just going to ask you, you know, you've got meds on board, you're self-medicating, you've had this weird experience where you almost die, a near-death experience. It's not congruent in your life anymore. What is going through your mind at this point? Do you ever question your own sanity as you're going through this? And was the presence there guiding you at the time, or had it kind of gone dormant?
It had kind of gone dormant. And I have many theories now. And of course, you know, as I'm talking to you now, I'm also giving you perspectives in hindsight 2020 after being here for 8 years, being involved in a spiritual and holistic health magazine, and doing a lot of my own research, because of course I come out of a journalism background, that I can now explain things in a much better way than I could at that present time. But I honestly can tell you, though, that my experience during that period where I was in the hotel having the checkout and come back, I can remember that more clearly even at this day. Probably it's been 15 years, more clearly than what I had for lunch yesterday. And that's something that Dr. Raymond Moody talks about, too, as one of the telltale signs, or one of the things that many people have consistency with, is it seems more real than the reality we are in now, which makes you could go off into many directions. And Buddhist philosophy is the one that I find most easy to describe some of these experiences, that we are all energy, we are in a continuum, and this in many ways is an illusion. So this is the illusion, and there's much more out there. I feel like our body is a vehicle by which we experience this reality.
Absolutely.
And it has five senses that are limited.
Very limited.
Very limited. For example, well, why can a dog hear a dog whistle and you can't hear it? Because the dog's physical avatar has a different ability to perceive within a bandwidth.
Yeah, or so, infrared. It's there. Or electricity, yes. Right? Before we had an instrument to measure it, it was still there. We just didn't know how to tap into it. And I feel like it's the same.
It is. So for most of my life, an analogy that a good friend of mine gave me was, well, it was like picking up a paper towel tube. You put it up to one eye, close the other eye, and all you saw was out the end of the tube. But what if you rip that tube away,
right,
and you start looking looking and you're like, wow, I was only seeing maybe 1% of what's really out there.
Well, and people sharing, like yourself, personal stories is also, I think, permission for others to really look at some of their own experiences. Because,
yes,
again, you were met with such resistance. And
yes.
But you're not questioning yourself during this time. You're feeling pretty confident,
yes,
in the experience that you had. But then things are falling apart, right?
Yes.
So the marriage falls apart, the animals die,
yes,
and then something happens at your job. What happened?
Well, I basically could no longer function as a result of taking all of these medications and also having experiences where I was self-medicating on top of it because I was feeling so much worse. And like I said, I am not here to say that all medications are bad. I'm just saying that my approach and my mindset, which I would say I was conditioned by Western society and our medical complex, was you go to the doctor and, you know, they give you a pill and it's going to work. And it doesn't always work.
But they asked you to leave, take a mandatory leave.
Yes, I took
absence.
A mandatory leave of absence. I went out on a short-term disability. Things got worse, not better. And I eventually decided to take a hiatus and come down here.
And that's what brings you to Sarasota.
Yes.
And fast forward, you're now in the Jeep after,
yes,
life has gotten really interesting and complicated, and now you find yourself in the story that we shared,
yes,
earlier. And for those of you just tuning in, we're talking with Lisa Cedrone about her near-death experience in one facet, but really in about her spiritual awakening or coming to terms with her spiritual self. So you have the accident, you come here. How does this open you up? What happens? Because this time the presence is there, which you're familiar with from the hotel incident.
Yes.
Only you're different, maybe, and more able or ready to accept it. The what is it you're thinking this is? This is a connection with a higher source? This is yourself? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, the main thing is it was confirmation. It was confirmation that what had happened 5 years ago with the near-death experience was, in fact, real. It really happened, because for 5 years I have been brainwashed, medicated, diagnosed mentally ill, and over time that starts to seep into your consciousness and you do start questioning yourself the further away it gets. So 5 years later, it comes back, and it was the confirmation I needed to know that I'm not going to shut this off again. Because a part of what happens when other people are constantly telling you you're crazy or this is going on, whether you want to or not, subconsciously you shut yourself off and you get into a place of fear, mm-hmm, and you get constricted and you are no longer connected to other bandwidths of reality, as I like to call them, realms, dimensions.
I agree, and I think that happens a lot with children, you know,
yes,
who are experiencing spiritual encounters and tell their parents or whatever, and they're like, oh, don't tell anybody that, or that's silly, or, you know,
yes,
it's your imagination. So I think we're kind of programmed into that, and especially as an adult, having to reopen that and acknowledge, especially when you've been called crazy for it. So,
yes,
yeah, that takes a lot of courage. So this presence is still with you today. How has it affected your current life, and what shifts occurred after the accident?
After the accident, I was left with the impression that it was time to start my spiritual journey, a new phase in life. And I said earlier in the interview that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. I did make a decision to go into recovery because I realized that the combination of what I was ingesting myself and what I was doing with the psychiatrist, going from one to the other and just doing that something had to change. So I worked with a doctor down here who's since passed away, a psychiatrist who was very helpful. I did my own research. I trusted my body. I said, you know what, this is not making me better, it's making me worse. I knew that self-medicating was making me worse.
Yeah.
So I went on a new journey, and I started over, and I said, I'm never closing the door to this again, because I just had this huge confirmation that I'm on the right path by that presence coming back to me. And I use the presence, it's my term. But an interesting thing happened about 6 months later after the accident. There was a couple in town, Marcus and Sheila Gillette. They channel a group soul called Theo, and they were actually the original couple that got Abraham Hicks to start channeling, and most people are familiar with that. Mm-hmm. And I had a chance to ask Theo in channel, what was going on? What was responsible? Was it a guardian angel? Was it my soul? Was it guides? And the answer I got was all of the above. And I was so disappointed. And then right. It took me a while to process it, and I realized that the universe is a conscious entity, and it's always creating. It is our thoughts plus our emotions that we put into motion that create it. Quantum physicists find it out all the time. When they think they're going to find a new particle,
right.
They do.
The Wheeler experiment, exactly. Schrodinger's cat.
Exactly. So I came to the conclusion that reality is a co-creative process. Me as an entity, I'm a co-creative person, and the more I open myself up, and it's like a radio channel, you're operating on a specific bandwidth, but how strong is your frequency? How far out can you go? And when we stay open, and emotions and our state of consciousness have a lot to do with it. And love, I learned, was a state of consciousness, not an emotion.
Right.
And when I'm open to that, my sphere of consciousness and what I can experience is much greater than what the five senses of the body can operate within.
So you're talking about staying open to that. What
yes.
are some of the techniques that you use, maybe, that you could share with others about how do you keep this connection open and active?
Personally, I chose, and I had gotten my own intuitive messages years ago about the tool of the tarot cards. It's a tool. It's a tool that helps me connect with my subconscious and also get glimpses into the superconscious and cosmic conscious, because I'm open and willing to use that, and it works for me. It's not going to work for anyone. I study with a tarot master in town, Marcia Bender.
Oh,
she's
I know Marcia.
She's trained 400 people. She has her own system, and she's become one of the greatest mentors in my life. And now that's just a tool. All of these modalities are tools, and we can choose the one that works for us. We don't have to get lost jumping from modality to modality.
Right.
Many roads lead to the same place.
Right. And just to accentuate another article that I had read of yours, you know, talking about, just reiterating to our listeners that we're not abdicating or advocating, I should say, any one particular path, that there are many paths.
Yes.
And whatever it is that resonates with you and fills your heart and makes you a more loving person, great.
Yes.
And continue on with what you're feeling works. So just an obvious question, Lisa, do you have any fear around death now?
Yeah. Can I just add? I just want to add two quick other things. Meditation.
Yes.
Which is listening to, I'm just going to call it higher forces because I'm very non-denominational. And prayer, which, you know, ritual creates energy, and energy is a big part of the co-creative process.
Yeah.
That and exploration. And there knowledge and learning, comparative studies, and a lot of Eastern philosophy have also been helped.
I'd love to do a show on rituals because it really is, that's a whole topic in and of itself.
Yes.
But so you also have been known to say at times like this in your story that you shared, at times like this, we must remember that every apocalypse ends with rebirth and that our traumas and challenges serve as catalysts for spiritual growth. Lisa, what's been one of your biggest lessons that you've taken from this? And we literally have 60 seconds.
The biggest lessons that I've taken from this are to have non-judgment. We are here, I have heard someone say this, it's the life learning lab. It's not about good and bad. It's about experience and what we learn from it. That's what we take forward with us. What we do in this life is extremely important because it helps guide us on what we do after this life. And I really do feel that we need to look at service to others, because that is truly what gets us into the state of consciousness of love, and it can open us up. It opens a portal in our heart that allows us to access these greater spiritual realms. And I also feel like we need to know that there is no one-size-fits-all answer. There's no one-size-fits-all vocabulary. Learn for yourself, go with your heart, and go within.
Lisa, thank you so much for being here today and sharing your story.
Darlene.
We could fill another hole.